Hey everybody, welcome back to America's Game, episode number 46. I am your host, Eric Vanek. You can find me on Twitter at EricVanekNFL. And as always, I am joined by my co-host, Scott Connor. Scott, what's going on, man?
Eric, welcome back. 46. Glad to be here. Diving into some auto accept trade blocks. We have a little breaking news, which is a perfect segue into the auto accept trade block. I saw you started putting a bunch of them out last week. Don't know how many deals you've gotten, but we can kind of talk the art of the auto accept trade block, why it's useful, why you want to do it over the next couple months, and also how to set the prices. I think a lot of times, and we'll put some caveats in there, it's easier for us to do it because we're in a lot of leagues, but I think a lot of times people are afraid to put prices that they don't think they're making a profit on the auto accept trade block. And we can talk about maybe why that's a fear that you shouldn't have and how you can overcome it. I also want to give a plug to Koopa Troopa, who came on the Patreon show on Thursday and did a show kind of about roster construction and warp and talked about the warp tool. But we kind of talked about how you can use the auto accept trade block in conjunction with the warp tool, with the roster construction, when it shows you that kind of like dead range or the droppable range. That's essentially where all the auto accept trade block players live on your roster, pretty much in that bench range where it's like, okay, I could see a path, but if you can turn that into some flexibility with some picks or consolidate to free up a roster spot, it can be valuable. So I'm looking forward to this show. The last couple we've done have been fun, but this is one, man, you and I have been doing auto accept trade blocks for years. And now I see more people not named you or me that are trying to do it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but this should be a fun show.
Yeah, we've always been doing this. I mean, kind of like me and you almost came up with it in a way, at least in our leagues that we saw. So yeah, this is always a fun topic to get into and talk about. And then I haven't gotten to listen to your thing with Koopa yet. I will hear shortly. But yeah, shout out also to Adam of 4D Chess. He had me on last night on their podcast that came out today, dropped today on the Destination Devi feed. So yeah, check that out. Me and Adam had a good time talking about pretty much like waivers after rookie draft and what you should be kind of doing and how you should be working on your roster, like constantly just churning and burning those like last like four or five roster spots that you have on your team and how to use them. And, you know, it's different for certain leagues, like shallower leagues. I'm probably just going to go with all running backs. Deeper leagues, okay, I might dabble into some quarterbacks, maybe a couple wide receivers here and there. But it was just different this year in rookie drafts because pretty much like all the running backs got drafted in your rookie drafts, unless it was like a three-round draft or something. But like these four, five-round drafts that me and Scott are in, like pretty much every running back was selected. So it's hard to kind of do it how we did last year where we just hammered running backs and then we just picked up all a bunch of running backs off of waivers. This year, you kind of have to maybe take some shot at some wide receivers, tight ends, quarterbacks to kind of fill those last spots or your last taxi squad spots. I know we don't love doing that, but hey, at least it's something, you know, but it's better than, you know, Daryl Williams or Damian Williams who hasn't had a job yet. So that's kind of where I was at with it.
Yeah, I got to give you kudos. That was a good show with Adam. That's a topic that if it ever comes up on anybody's feed, like besides myself, you would be the person I'd be like, that's the person to go and interview to talk about that topic. Because how many times do we look at teams in our leagues and we look at their rosters and you're just like, what are they doing? They don't have a full team. They don't use their taxi. They're blowing waiver money on Ben Skowronek during the off season. It's just like, there's no direction. There's no sense of roster construction. Sure. Are you grinding the edges 3 to 5% over the course of a season? Yeah. But wouldn't you rather have 3% than just absolutely a dead roster that half the roster spots are wasted? You're not using your taxi. You're blowing your fab on pointless shit. And then you get to the season and you're like, man, this team's bad. Even if the team's good, how much did you leave on the bone where, you know, you left an extra win or an extra couple picks that you could have grinded out? You left those on the table because you just didn't pay attention or you didn't maximize, you know, potentially what you could have been doing in the offseason. So this is for like, this show's going to be kind of for the hardcores, but so was the 4D show that you did. It was like, literally how to value the last five roster spots. And to one of the points I wanted to bring up to you that I think you nailed was you have to have a plan with those roster spots. If you are in a league where it's only 30-man rosters, why are you blowing your fab on Xavier Hutchinson? Unless here's the thing. Unless you're planning on saying, I'm cutting him if he's not the wide receiver three out of camp, you wasted your money. Because if you go, oh, man, he'll be the wide receiver three in 2025. Are you really going to waste that roster spot for 2 years just to hope he doesn't get overdrafted by two more rookie classes and free agency two times? Like, I think that's the thing. You got to have a purpose, and you nailed it with the running back. Dude, even if I add Xavien Valladay or Kalen LeBorn, if they get cut, then they get cut off my team. There is no, like, I'll hold him to see if he signs. They get cut, you cut him. It's easy. And he either makes it or he doesn't. So it's actually more valuable to have that because you're going to free up the roster spot again if he doesn't make the team. So it's either a positive outcome or it's a roster spot. There's no in between. And I think people just don't get that. They just pick up guys randomly and they go, oh, I'll just see if this guy develops. And then next year they're cutting Xavier Hutchinson because he never did anything. He's getting cut to make next year's fifth round pick. You're like, dude, you just wasted a roster spot for an entire year. So I think that was a major point that 90% of teams, they just don't get it. They just don't. You can look at their team and you can tell immediately if they have a plan. And it's usually like 3 or 4 out of 12 teams have a plan and everyone else is just flying blind.
Yeah, and there's a lot of teams, too, that I know me and you always laugh and talk about it, that still are carrying guys who retired, literally, like Le'Veon Bell, Emmanuel Sanders I've seen on teams, T.Y. Hilton, you know, like, just why are you even still holding these guys? Like, they haven't signed anywhere. It's just mind-boggling to me that people just waste roster spots like that. Like, That bugs me too. And then teams, like, if it's a 30-man rosters and then you go and look at their roster and they have 24 players only, like, what are you doing? So, and you don't use your taxi squad spots, you know, those aren't filled. Like, just one of my biggest pet peeves in fantasy. Like, I just don't get how you can't be making sure your roster is absolutely maximized. So
you're saying that I shouldn't be carrying, like, I don't know, Samari Toure, should I be holding him still?
Probably not, because they just drafted, what, two more wide receivers plus two tight ends, and they still have Christian Watson and Romeo Dubs, who they drafted last year, too, above him. So, yeah, no, I probably wouldn't be carrying him right now. And that's why we did the AFC and NFC roster, you know, shows that we did the last 2 weeks or 2 weeks before. You know, we told you who to cut, who to keep and whatnot. And I'm pretty sure Samari Toure was not one of the guys to keep.
Yeah, I just picked a random league and I looked at the team and it's a point per carry league. So, of course, receivers matter even less.
Right.
But then I just look at this roster and they're still carrying Kenny Golladay. Yeah, that's a good one to carry.
Yeah.
Lil Jordan Humphrey. You still be holding him?
Yeah. He went to Denver back with Sean Payton now, maybe.
How about Colin Johnson? Would you still be holding him on a team with 10 receivers and a torn Achilles?
Yeah, no, he would have been gone last year when he tore his Achilles.
How about DeMarcus Robinson? Still hasn't signed yet.
Yeah,
that guy's bounced around like 8 times. So, yeah, gone. Right. Traquan Smith, you think he has a path still?
No, if he couldn't do it 3 years ago, 4 years ago when I was on him, he ain't going to be doing it now.
Yeah. And that's one team that has these guys. And there's others that are on there that are still like, man, Jalen Tolbert, Trent Sherfield. Yeah. Jacob Harris. There's one. He switched back to receiver on Jacksonville. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yep.
That's all on one team. That's literally wasting like a dozen spots. And that doesn't even count the tight ends, too. Luke Farrell. It's a good one to hold.
That's the Jacksonville tight end, right?
Yep. Yep. Okay. How about Sam Ellinger? You still holding him?
Whoa. That's a major woof.
I mean, any running back on a 53, right? But are you holding any Benny Snell?
No. No. Not holding Benny Snell.
I mean, these are all on one roster. I mean, it's just literally, it's just, And this is 37-man rosters with six taxi. There's no taxi on this one. And there's only 34 on the active roster. So we're literally wasting at least 15 roster spots, if not 20. So
that's why these teams never compete. Like, they just donate. They're a donation to the league basically every single year.
Well, and if you're going to play that way, that's fine if it's a start 10, but this is a start 13.
Yeah.
So wasting that many roster spots in a deep league, it's like, man, you're I don't want to say you're leaving free points on the table, but you are. You never know when the players in those ranges are going to pop up and you're going to be able to use them even one or two times over the course of a year or two. It matters. So this show is going to be for the people that are in those start 11 plus leagues with massive rosters, or best ball leagues where the rosters are expanded or whatever. Like, if you're going to start 9, okay, this probably isn't your show. The auto accept trade block is largely going to be irrelevant because that droppable range or all those bench players aren't going to be worth much. But anyway, we'll get into it. You want to talk some real quick, DeAndre Hopkins impact? We saw he just got cut by Cardinals. What are you thinking there? Where do you think he goes first?
Man, I could see a couple different teams that he could end up with. You know, I think one of the rumors or teams that he was interested in was, what, Kansas City, Philadelphia, Buffalo, the Chargers, and one other one. Do you remember what the fifth one was?
The other quarterback he wanted Baltimore. To catch balls for, Baltimore, yeah. Okay. I don't think he goes to Baltimore now.
No.
I don't think he goes to the Chargers because of their cap situation.
Yeah, not the Eagles.
Eagles, I don't think so either. I think Buffalo or KC would make sense. Buffalo would make sense, and KC certainly would make sense.
Yeah, Buffalo definitely could use that second wide receiver. You know, we've seen how much they kind of struggled during the playoffs. Like, if Diggs isn't on fire, like, they really don't have anybody else, like a go-to guy right now. So Buffalo would be a really nice spot for him to end up. Kansas City would be a decent spot as well, obviously playing with Mahomes. They have a lot of wide receivers there. Honestly, the Giants could really use him.
You know where I think he goes, which people aren't going to like? Mm-hmm. Tennessee. They'll pay him. He'll get as many targets as he wants. And remember the reports, if he comes available, they definitely are interested.
Interesting.
Now, is that a place he goes to win a title? No. Does he go there to play with one of the top five quarterbacks? No. But if they say, hey, we'll give you 200 targets and rework your deal to get paid what you would have gotten paid in Arizona, then he may take it, you know, and just hit free agency next year. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what his priorities are, honestly. Is his priority to win a championship? Well, it's obviously not in Tennessee. But is it just to accumulate stats and get paid money? Then, yeah, that's a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he would want to go there. But, yeah, exactly like you said, they may put an offer on the table that other teams can't offer. Other than the Chiefs, like, there's probably no place he can go and he's the number one guy. And you could argue on the Titans, he would be. So let's assume he goes to a bad spot like the Titans. What do you think he'll be selling for? You think people will talk themselves into he could get 170, 180 targets there?
I think so. I don't know, maybe 150, yeah.
Okay, let's say he would get 30% of the target share, don't you think? So whatever that probably number is,
yep.
150, 160. Would you buy? Would you pay a late first on the Titans?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Tannehill's been efficient in his career. It's not like Tannehill's this completely awful quarterback or anything, so I could see it, yeah.
And then midway through the season, how frustrated is Hopkins when it's Will Levis can't even get him the ball?
Yeah, and then pulls a Randy Moss and gets out of there.
It could end very badly.
Right.
But wouldn't that just be the typical Titans where everyone thinks they should rebuild, but they're trading for or they're signing 31-year-old receivers and paying them a shit ton of money?
Yeah, and I'm assuming Vrabel was with the Texans when Hopkins was there, when he was the defensive coordinator. So I'm sure they probably have a little bit of a connection. I was kind of trying to think of some coaching connections that he would have.
Patriots?
No, he ain't going there. Him and Bill hate each other. O'Brien, that is.
Who else do you think he could go to? Browns?
I think the Browns are a possibility. They're always one of those teams that will go for guys like that. I just don't know if they're the favorite. But if him and Watson, you know, have connected really well in the past, obviously, I could definitely see it.
God, that would muddy up the Browns receiver core, wouldn't it?
I think it would be just Cooper and Cooper, Hopkins, Elijah Moore, and kind of Peoples-Jones and Tillman would just kind of be, you know, background players, and Peoples-Jones will just go to free agency next year. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind it. Like, I wouldn't hate it if they ended up doing that. I don't know if it's the best one.
It's just money, though, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you're willing to pay, he will go somewhere. Browns are a fringe team that has a potentially a good quarterback that he knows, but also a team that has a chance to contend. It isn't like the Browns are guaranteed to suck. So, I mean, he could be a piece that gets them to the playoffs.
Right.
So I could see that. I could see the Browns over the Titans.
I'm trying to think of some teams that, like, he could go to and kind of make that big difference to, like, get them into the playoffs or, you know, at least maybe into the second round of the playoffs. That's kind of why I mentioned the Giants first.
Here's one. How about the Falcons?
Yeah, him and Drake London could be nice. I mean, they have they signed Mac Hollins and Scotty Miller, but neither of those guys are going to take anything away from Hopkins. So,
how about the Panthers?
Yeah, Panthers would be a good one.
Yeah.
Give Bryce Young another veteran wide receiver to throw the ball to. I would like that for sure.
Washington? He wouldn't go to Washington, probably.
No, I think they're kind of... they're kind of set with their three wide receivers right now, so I would probably say no on that one. Do the Bears still have a bunch of money? I don't...
No, but yeah. you know who maybe could? What about the Raiders? Be a Raiders move, wouldn't it? Reunite Adams and Hopkins and be like, we have the best receiver core, but then they realize it's not 2017.
Yeah, wow. That would be interesting.
Couldn't you see the Raiders if they're... I mean, anybody that's willing to pay, I think, would get his attention.
Yeah. I wonder if... what if Aaron Rodgers wants him? And I know they have 35 wide receivers already, too. And then they just use that. They cut Corey Davis and basically give that money to Hopkins. That could be interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of things that could still happen. He's a receiver that, you know, obviously wasn't worth trading a third-round pick for, but... there's a lot of teams that are probably looking at their receiver core and saying he's at least our wide receiver three, wide receiver two.
How about this one, Miami? And you could play Waddle and Tyreek in the slot, and obviously one, the other one on the outside and Hopkins on the outside.
Yeah, that it's going to end up being something like that where it's he's going to go somewhere and we're going to go, what the hell do we do with all their players, you know?
Yeah.
Like if he went to like the Chargers, would that just like kill like Mike Williams?
Probably, yeah. Definitely, Quentin Johnson wouldn't do anything this year.
Eagles?
It'd
have to hurt Smitty and Goddard a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they're not going to be putting up the season that they put up last year, for sure.
I think, I mean, you go somewhere like that, it hurts everybody. Bills, it crushes Gabe Davis?
Yeah.
Or do you think he just is what he is? Boom or bust?
Yeah, he would just become more boom or bust than he already is.
It probably kills all the other guys, right? It would probably hurt Kincaid. It would probably hurt all the other, like, secondary guys you were hoping might be useful. Because between him and Diggs, like, that's 40 to 50% of the targets at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that comes to mind, but... ooh, man.
So you don't think Patriots have any shot here?
No, because I don't think him and Bill O'Brien get along. And Belichick does. I mean, he has in the past, I guess, signed guys like this. But I think, yeah, with Bill O'Brien and his past, I don't think so. I don't think he would go there.
Okay.
Detroit would be interesting.
Yeah.
With J-Mo out for a little bit, and obviously they don't really have an outside receiver with Amon-Ra there, pretty much man in the slot. Like, Hopkins would be a really nice fit there, too.
That is a good call. I think Detroit's a very good call. Green Bay could be a good call, too. I mean, I don't know what these teams are cap-wise. We'd have to look it up, but yeah, very interesting. Well, we'll see. You think he signs quickly?
Yeah, I would say he seems like maybe he'll sign like Sunday or Monday, like during the holiday, maybe. I'm thinking. Yep. I think it'll be quick.
Well, we'll see. Stay tuned on where he signs. And what do you think the market will be where he signs? I mean, obviously it's going to matter the specifics, but let's say he goes to a Detroit or a Buffalo or a KC where people clearly see a path of him being like a 25% guy, you know, on good offenses. It's not 25% on the Titans or 25% on this team. It's 25% on what we think is a higher volume, good offense. There'll be people paying first, don't you think?
Yeah.
I'm going to be in the playoffs. I'll give you my next year's first for him.
Yeah, I think so. Especially like if it's like the Buffalo or one of those teams that you were mentioning and they have that quarterback, that guy who's going for it has Josh Allen and he signs in Buffalo. Oh, yeah, I'll give you my late first and get that combo on my team. So I could see that.
Would you sell if that happens or would it be team specific? Because I think I have, let me look at my Hopkins shares here. I don't have a ton. I have 3 shares. That's probably enough for me just to say I'll just hold 1 or 2. It depends on where he goes, you know, but I don't think I'll probably be the person that's buying unless it's exactly what you said where I have like an extra first and I can stack with whatever QB he goes to.
Yeah, I kind of think team specific. If you're a team that's, you know, in it and, you know, why trade him? You know, if he's going to be one of your guys that you count on every single week, you know, he's going to be one of your starting 3 wide receivers. I think I would just hold him there. If I have a lot of depth and I can afford the loss, sure, I'll take an extra first and gamble and see what happens. So I think, yeah, like you said, kind of just team dependent.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about that probably more next week or in future episodes, depending on what happens with him.
So getting into the auto accept trade block, if, you know, as soon as he moves, you just throw him up there for any first? Or does it have to be 2024?
Could he be auto accept trade blocked now?
I think so.
What would you ask?
I think I'd still leave it at the first. The late first. Well, I mean, obviously you're not going to know if it's a late first, but I would sell them for any first. Yeah.
Any first. So you would take 25 too. Cause here's the thing. If he goes to the Titans, you're not going to get a first. If he goes to the Chiefs, you're going to kick yourself for accepting a 25 first. So you're kind of taking the gamble on either side. And so is the person that's buying him, which is why the person that's buying him might say, hey, I'm a good team. I'll give you my 25 first. I'll just take a gamble that I'm going to be able to get him, you know, cheaper now than I would if he signs in a good spot. But they could also get burned. So I just wonder how much traction there's going to be. And generally, how much traction is there with players that are in the first round range on auto accept trade blocks, have you found? And then we'll talk a little more about how to exactly do it. But you never really see players for first on auto accept trade blocks unless it's very rare.
Yeah, I hardly ever put guys up for first. It's usually like my depth players that I'm putting up that I could try and sell for some like thirds or fourths or seconds or whatever. But yeah, I don't really put too many guys up for first.
So let's talk about how to implement the auto accept trade block. So your rookie draft is over. You've probably already run waivers. If you haven't run waivers, that's even better because the roster spots are probably worth a little more if you haven't run the waivers after the draft has ended. But let's just say it has. Waivers have kind of already been picked clean. Maybe there's a couple players out there that you are struggling with. Hey, I want to pick this guy up, but then I go through my teams and I just don't really want to cut anybody to drop them yet. Or a couple of those guys out there that are currently free agents get dropped, like a Melvin Gordon or Kenyon Drake. Like, I'll still pick those guys up. But until they sign, they may sit out there on waivers for a little while. But I'd like to pick them up before then because it's exactly what we talked about earlier. If those guys don't sign and we get to the start of the season, then that's when I probably cut them. But I'm going to know whether I'm going to keep them or not. They're either going to sign somewhere and they're going to be on a 53-man roster or they're not. So I really don't – I know I'm going to be able to turn that spot over. So I like using spots on that versus – I mean, I'll just share one of the things I've probably done too much is in these two PPR leagues or these two tight end leagues, I got way too many tight ends. Now, it's early in the offseason, so I can justify carrying 11 tight ends. But when I get to the season and I have to cut down to like 32, do you really want to have like Hunter Long, Cole Turner, Will Mallory, Josh Wiley, all you want to have seven of those guys on one team?
No, not really.
Because none of them are even your starter. You know, you probably have a couple others that you're like actually using. But then I look, even if it's two PPR, do I really want 10 tight ends where one out of four of them might ever become useful? So I got to start looking at like, all right, why do I have so many Hunter Longs and Cole Turners and Peyton Hendershots and Grant Calcaterras? And like, how many of those guys can I really carry? Do I need 11 Adam Troutmans? Like a couple, but I know there's going to have to be some cuts from those ranges, even in heavy tight end premium leagues. And that's where, man, if there's ever any of those guys that I can like flip for a fourth or fab or something like that, that's probably where I'm focusing a lot of my auto accept trade blocks and just hoping I can sell somebody that it's a two PPR league. Two PPR, hey, you want to buy that Jeremy Ruckert for a fourth or whoever the name is, you know, like go ahead. It actually helps me out. It makes one less decision that I have to make later on. But yeah, set the stage. Rookie draft's done. You've already picked waivers clean. You and I have maxed out rosters. What's the process here? What's the goal? You have a maxed out roster. Why are you setting the auto accept trade block? Because you just did like 15 of them last week.
So one of the things that I want to do, and one of the main things I want to do, is acquire capital that I could use during the season. So if I have a bunch of thirds and seconds and fourths, extra ones that I can get from doing these trades, then I can use that 2024 third, 2024 second during the season. And, you know, just last year's example, hey, Deontay Foreman is starting the rest of the year because Christian McCaffrey got traded. Any 2023 third got him, basically. Okay, sure. Here you go. Here's an extra third that I acquired from a, you know, auto accept trade block trade that I did earlier in the season or preseason, whenever. And I got that extra third, and now I can use it on Deontay Foreman, who's going to really start for the rest of the year. And Deontay Foreman had like 2-3 touchdown games, I think, last year or something crazy like that. He had a bunch of touchdowns, and especially like in a best ball league, or if he did start him that week in a lineup league, he probably won you a week or two. And that's, you know, and talking about warp, that's a warp difference maker for the week for you. Like, that's going to win you a week. So having guys like that, being able to buy spot start running backs, maybe I can buy, I got a quarterback on buy, and, you know, Tyler Huntley's making the start this week. I can buy a Tyler Huntley if I need to, and maybe get me through a matchup that week where I was only going to have one quarterback. Well, now I got a second one that I can use, and, you know, maybe it wins you that week when maybe you weren't going to because you didn't have a second quarterback. So just trying to do that. You know, I want to acquire some extra picks that I can use during the season is one of my main goals.
So to piggyback on that, obviously trying to get liquidity, right? But it's very easy to do it in lineup leagues where you have a taxi and it's a really active league with start 12. Like, obviously we all know that the picks, the thirds and fourths have a little more value there. Not just because if you have to have drafted players, you end up adding like to your stable of running backs or whatever. Like, it's, we have some leagues where it's like, it's really valuable to have those kind of picks every single year. But to piggyback on this, what if it's best ball? What if it's best ball and you're selling what you think could be like usable dart players, usable receivers, players in lineup leagues? You'd be like, let's get them off my roster. You know, a guy like Josh Palmer in a lineup league, you'd take a third for all day, maybe even a fourth at this point. But in a best ball, you're like, okay, there's a place. Would you, in best ball, are you willing to sell like those type of receivers for thirds, or is it team context? Because I don't see it in best ball as much, and I think it's because people are scared to trade depth in best ball, because as soon as you want my depth piece, immediately there's this grand illusion in their head, oh man, he's going to hit my lineup once or twice. I can't trade him away for a pick. Because then what if I have to make that pick and I end up drafting a receiver? I don't know if the receiver is even going to be as good as Josh Palmer. So how do you do it in best ball versus lineup? Because obviously the theory is way different, because you're just trading from your excess in lineup leagues.
Right. I think in best ball, it's kind of the same way, just kind of looking at maybe wide receivers. I think you can buy like a spot start wide receiver. You know, Josh Palmer, a good example. Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are hurt. You know, I could maybe buy Mike Williams for a week or two with a pick like that, you know. And then kind of looking at your waivers as well. Like, maybe is there some extra guys I can pick up that'll, you know, I get that extra free pick, and I can pick up, you know, like Mac Hollins last year, Marquise Goodwin last year. Those guys are on the waiver wire. Like, the chances that Mac Hollins or Marquise Goodwin hit your lineup last year were just as good as Josh Palmer was. So maybe on your waiver wires, there's a guy you can pick up to kind of replace that spot. So that's kind of how I look at it on best ball. It is a little different, and I'm probably not rostering as many running backs as I would in lineup leagues, just because having, you know, Zamir White and Ty Chandler and Trestan Ebner, and having all those guys on my best ball teams, those are probably weekly zeros for me every single week, whereas I want to fill probably those spots with wide receivers instead that I know that are playing. Like, you get this random Josh Reynolds week, you get a random Nick Westbrook-Ikhine week where, you know, he's got 2 for 98 and a touchdown, you know, and that could easily go in your lineup that week. Those guys have more of a chance to hit than some of those running backs do. So yeah, I get it in best ball like that, but that's kind of how I'm looking at it in best ball.
So basically what you're saying is it's a roster construction thing. It really isn't an auto accept trade block thing. Mm-hmm. But likely the guys you're putting on your auto accept trade block in a best ball league, you'd be willing to sell the handcuff running backs. If someone else wants to give you the third for Ty Chandler, you would do it in a best ball league.
Right. Yeah.
Versus in a lineup league, you may want to sell the receiver and keep Ty Chandler because of how you're planning on using him. So is it really just the type of player you'd be trying to sell in those two leagues? Give me an example of like the types of players you'd be putting on a auto accept block in a lineup versus a best ball league. How does it differ?
Yeah, so lineup, I think it kind of just depends on, like you said, the makeup of your roster. You're kind of looking at some of the like back end running back pieces that you might have, like the third, fourth running backs on teams, or you're looking at wide receivers that are really not like guys that you are comfortable starting every single week. So a deal that I made last week, for example, I gave away Gabe Davis and I got a second and a third for Gabe Davis. You know, I probably could have got more last year. It sucks, but you know what? A second and a third right now for Gabe Davis in a lineup league start nine, probably the best I'm going to get. So, you know, in a league like that, I probably would do that for Gabe Davis. Now, if that was best ball, I'm not doing that, because Gabe Davis, I know, could easily have 3 or 4 blow-up weeks next year for Buffalo. So it's probably not a deal I would want to do. I'd probably want like 2 seconds or maybe maybe you can get a first, I doubt it, but probably get 2 seconds for Gabe Davis in that, so you could ask for a little more. And then, like you said, in best ball leagues, if you put up these Ty Chandlers, these Zamir Whites, Craig Reynolds, guys like that, and you can get any picks for those guys are really getting you zeros every single week, and if somebody's willing to give you those extra threes and fours to get those guys, then sure, here you go, I can do it. But that's kind of where I'm going at with it for each league. Lineup leagues, kind of just selling some of those excess wide receivers, tight ends. Maybe you have enough running backs and you get that spot start running back that's on your roster. Najee Harris gets hurt for a couple weeks and you have Jaylen Warren. Somebody's willing to give you a second for Jaylen Warren. Here you go. And, you know, if you don't really need Jaylen Warren. So that's something else you can kind of look at too. It kind of depends on maybe the injury luck as well.
So in terms of the pricing, I see a lot of people put up auto accepts, and I'll be honest, there's a lot of yours where I'm like, no way I would pay that price. But what are you thinking when you put the prices on there? Because to appeal, I guess here's the psychology. Let's backtrack for a second. Let's go to the psychology of why the auto accept trade block is useful. One, it's a more creative way to trade players. It's easier to do this than it is to engage in a discussion about Khalil Shakir or insert whatever random player. Rarely are you messaging somebody saying, hey, I'm looking to move Khalil Shakir, or I'm looking to move Deion Jackson. Are you interested? All right. That's not like a discussion you'd probably have. At the same time, when people see something that they know they can have and all they have to do is pay this price, immediately their mind goes to, okay, it's a cost-benefit analysis. I either get the player or I get him at this price. There's no in-between. There is no haggling. There's no sending four offers back and forth. Here's the price. You either pay it or you don't. And I think human psychology is gravitating towards, you're going into the store, here's the prices. If you don't agree with it, then you walk away and you don't buy anything. But at least you know what it's going to cost. And sometimes there's comfort in knowing what something's going to cost versus, well, someone said it might cost me this, and then as soon as I try to buy it, they raise the price on me. Like, that can be very frustrating. And I know you've been jaded before about having to trade, so this is an easier way for you to kind of just make trades back and forth. No talking, no communicating, no haggling. You either like the price or you don't. You can miss me with, oh, those prices are shitty. Like, we see those in the comments sometimes. I'm sure you've got those people posting the message, oh, why would anyone pay those dumb prices? You know, like, you know, you can just be quiet if you don't like the price, you know, walk out of the store. But what's the psychology when you go to set the prices? Because I think it's pretty clear why people like it. People like, hey, I'm bored. Someone sends me an email or a trade bait update. Here's the prices. If I don't like it, I move on. But how do you go ahead and determine the prices? I mean, obviously knowing there's a benefit to you to get deals done, how do you set the prices?
I don't think there's like really like an exact science to it for me. I just kind of look at, you know, maybe I'll look at keep trade cut, see where they're valued at, and kind of like base it off. Okay, if I, you know, it's like you said, Deion Jackson, and he's valued around, you know, Josh Kelly, you know, I like, okay, if I wanted Josh Kelly, I think like a third would probably do it, something like that. And I'd be okay. You know, okay, I think Deion Jackson is the same way. I'll put it up for a third. Kind of just kind of looking at, you know, similar prices of the guys that are around them in the same tier, kind of like that. That's kind of how I always do it. You know, I think there, like you said, there's rarely times that I'm putting up guys for a first, but maybe I will, you know, if I have, you know, a Dalvin Cook, like, I just don't think I'm trading Dalvin Cook for a second straight up. Like, I'd probably still want a first. If I, Joe Mixon, you know, guys like that, Alvin Kamara, probably put those guys up for a first. There'd be at times too where, you know, like I mentioned with Gabe Davis, like, sure, I like a second, maybe I want a little more on top of him. So I go a second and a third. You know, there's times that I'm doing that as well. Like, I run into that a lot actually, where I'm like, maybe a third isn't just enough. Maybe I need to, like, a third and a fourth would satisfy what I would want. I open up that roster spot, I get two free picks out of it, and move on. I know you did that in a couple leagues for Nico Collins. You move Nico Collins for a third and a fourth. I probably would have paid that price, but, you know, someone beat me to it. So that was another good deal. I think you could probably have gotten a little more for Nico Collins just because it looks like he's going to be the number one receiver on that team. But yeah, you're just, you know, picking up some picks and just trying to see, you know, you're trying to do fair offers on these players. You're not like going out, oh, I want, here's Matt Breida, I want a second for Matt Breida. Well, no one in their right mind is giving you a second for Matt Breida. You're probably going to have to ask for like a fourth at this point for Matt Breida. And if you can get it, then awesome. If they don't pay, they don't want to pay it, they don't want to pay it. But it kind of also gives you an idea of, hopefully your league's paying attention, but if you're not getting any offers on these guys, you can, they're probably going to be safe to cut when you need to go and make your cuts as well. So kind of get some intel on it that way as well.
That's the next point I actually wanted to bring up, but you just led right into it. So when you go and you set the prices, you'll be able to get a feel on your league. How much are picks valued? What can you typically get with the picks? That's the other thing, is some of our leagues are devy depleted. Some of our leagues are tight end premium, point per carry, start 12. Like, the pick values in that league versus a stock 12 team start 10 with 25 man rosters, like, fourths are useless in that league. But there's other leagues where I want as many fourths as I can get, because even if I have a couple fourths, there's a chance I can move up from the 408 and the 410 to the 402 and get a player that I want. Like, in that league, it would matter. There's other leagues where that deal would be completely meaningless. You know, like our Royal Rumble league, right? It's only 25-man rosters. The players available in the fourth, they're no better than waiver players. If you can trade those picks for fab dollars, I'd rather have the fab dollars, because I can use the fab dollars later. I don't have to pick a seventh-round receiver or a sixth-round quarterback in the fourth round. That's automatically a roster clogger, especially in best ball. If you're picking a running back, you're picking up a backup quarterback, that's probably a roster clogger in a best ball league. So to understand your league and what picks are valued where, are picks valued in certain ranges in certain leagues? You'll know the leagues where it will make sense to do the auto accept trade blocks. But I think the other thing that you mentioned that's very, very important here is, if you trade a player for a third, you're actually getting a leverage trade, even though it's a one for one, because you've identified that the roster spot is worth X. It's worth X player that I can pick up off waivers. And how many deals have you done auto accept deals, and then you pick up a player that you're literally like, is the same that I traded away?
All the time.
So, like, I traded away this guy. I picked up a player that I literally could see in a month is the same as the guy I traded away, and I just got a third for that guy, and this guy was on waivers. So I think that's another thing, is that trading from the auto accept trade block, you should only put pieces on the auto accept trade block that other people might want. Or B, if you're putting them on there for a fourth and no one does it, you have to ask yourself, why do I have this guy? Now, if it's just there's nobody better to pick up, then fine. But a lot of times there's players that I put out there for a fourth, no one buys. So that's my question to you. If you cut some of those players, is it actually better that you cut those players and make somebody else waste the spot on him? And maybe even you cut Deion Jackson, someone might actually blow like six fab to pick him up, and now he's their problem, because right, the league has already said he's not even worth a fourth.
Right.
So it's like you're actually benefiting your team by trying to get the fourth or trying to get fab dollars, then you cut them.
Yep. I have so much Matt Breida, Salvin Ahmed, Miles Gaskin, and I put those guys up for like fourths this time I just did it. Nothing. So it's like
some Boston Scotts.
Yeah, Boston Scotts, guys like that. Like Matt Breida, definitely. I have a bunch of him. I'm stashed on teams for whatever reason. And yeah, can't even get like a fourth form. So yeah, maybe it is kind of like the sabotage drop. You drop them and then somebody else can pick them up and they're their problem. The only thing is you just have to have the ability to make a waiver claim and pick up somebody better, you know, or has more of a future. Like if you can get one of these UDFA running backs that are, you know, one of the hot names to pick up, or you know, maybe like somebody cut Kenyon Drake or, you know, something like that, that you mentioned, you know, that still has a chance to make a roster here. Yeah, I think I would be able to do that.
So I'm looking at our best ball one USFFL, right? Where you have Deion Jackson on waivers, or you have Deion Jackson on the auto accept block for a fourth.
Yep.
So then I look at waivers and let's see who's out there. Craig Reynolds, Matt Breida, Boston Scott, Miles Gaskin. They're all the same, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
So it's like, if you can't get the fourth for Deion Jackson, that's fine. But who would probably be the players you'd be looking to pick up? Probably one of those guys,
probably,
right?
One of those guys, yeah.
So like, it is harder to do this. And I think maybe, how do you pivot when you're in that pickle to where, man, I'm stuck with Deion Jackson and there's five equivalent players on waivers. I can't have them all. Because really, the power would be to have them all and wait to see if anything happens with any of them versus having to pick which one out of five is going to be worth something. So how do you combat that? Because even if you were able to just drop Deion Jackson and pick one of the others up, you're not really gaining anything. Do you think there's some merit to then trade maybe a guy that you see a slight tier ahead of those guys and liquidate him and then slive one of those extra ones off waivers into his place? It's effectively the same thing, right?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, or if there's like a different position where I can maybe get a body, like if I can go pick up Braxton Berrios or Scotty Miller on a free agency, you know, because one of those guys I think could have some value this year. And I drop, you know, that Deion Jackson, and he gets added to that group of five that you mentioned. And if something happens with any of those five, I can easily go back and pick him up. You know, if a couple things happen to some of those guys, you know, they're still going to be out there. So, you know, maybe I get that starting slot receiver, Scotty Miller or Braxton Berrios, and they end up hitting this year. And, you know, I changed my roster construction a little bit and got, you know, maybe a useful, more useful player.
If I told you there was a backup quarterback that's clearly going to be the backup, would you potentially pick those guys up? At what point would you start picking those guys up over these fours? I mean, best ball especially, because quarterbacks and running backs are either they're worth it that week or they're not. Would you consider maybe picking up a backup quarterback instead of one of those running backs, or do you think it not matters? Doesn't matter.
It depends. Like, I don't want to have, like, seven or eight quarterbacks on my roster in best ball, and five or six of them are just backups, and I'm just taking a 0-0-0-0 every single week on those guys. So I think it comes to a point where you can try down a couple guys, you know, that you have some faith in, like some of these younger rookie quarterbacks that came in this year, like an Aiden O'Connell, Jake Haener, I think has some potential, like one of those guys. You know, trying to think of some other, like a Tyrod Taylor. Teddy Bridgewater hasn't signed anywhere yet. If somebody dropped Teddy Bridgewater, like, I'll take a shot at Teddy Bridgewater. Drew Locke, we kind of talked about a couple weeks ago. You know, Zach Wilson, Kyle Trask. Kyle Trask, like, it's not out of the realm that he beats out Baker Mayfield this year. So, you know, if I can get a guy like that, yeah, sure.
Funny, the league you were talking about, the one I'm looking at right now, the best ball one, Teddy Bridgewater's out there.
Okay.
Colt McCoy's out there.
Yeah, he could end up starting.
I think he's been dropped a couple times by multiple teams. I think I cut him in that league because I'm just like, I don't want to hold him. But I'm looking at your roster. You have Deshaun Watson, but you're also holding Dorian Thompson-Robinson. You have Tua, and you're also holding Mike White. And you have two Devy quarterbacks, and you have Jameis Winston. So you already have seven quarterback spots. So does picking up Mitch Trubisky or Colt McCoy really help you that much? Or you're kind of like, I'll just worry about it if it happens.
Yeah, I think I'm just at the point where I'll worry about it if something happens at that point. I have Jameis on there. I'm kind of see what happens there, even though like Derek Carr is like an Iron Man and doesn't miss any games really. So that kind of sucks for him, but I think Jameis still has some really good potential if he ended up starting again.
That was another question I was going to have for you, is what do you do with these backup quarterbacks auto accept wise? Would you sell like Jameis for a third? Would you sell Carson Wentz for a third?
Yeah, I've done that in a few of my leagues to where, you know, if it's really clogging up my roster spot, like I had like Mike White as a fifth quarterback and I went to the Tua owner already and like, hey, will you give me a third or a fourth for him? And they're like, no, like I'll just go ahead and put him out there for a third and see if somebody will give me a third for Mike White. That's another thing you can do. Like I just mentioned, like if you're carrying a Mike White, a Tyrod Taylor, maybe you go to that team that has Daniel Jones or Tua and see if you can make a trade, you know, to give that guy their backups. So that's another thing I like to do as well. But yeah, for the quarterbacks like that, yeah, putting like them up for like a third or a fourth if they're warranted, I think that's more than fine to go ahead and do.
Like the Gardner Minshew to the Richardson guy, or the Andy Dalton to the Bryce Young team, like
Trubisky,
you don't want to cut those backups, but man, you can only afford so many of those guys on your team. And there's some leagues where I have like three of them on one roster. And I'm like, man, I wish I had this roster spot, but it's too early to just dump because you don't know what those, you know, you don't know what injuries could happen or that kind of stuff either. But it just feels like that navigating those backup QB waters are, you know, it's a little dicey. Like you almost want to hold until the season, you know?
Like I got a couple teams that I picked up like Matt Corral for free. And I maybe have like a Malik Willis or two hanging around. what do you do with those guys? Like, yeah, they just got drafted. Matt Corral, we haven't even really seen on the field outside of like a couple preseason games. Like, I think
easy.
Matt Corral,
Zach Wilson, Malik Willis, those guys are just auto accepts. Take right. them, please. I'll take Fab just for him.
Take Fab for him. Okay. So that's kind of where you're at with it. I'm just like,
I mean,
man,
in best ball, how do you hold those guys in best ball?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I just kind of was curious of what your thoughts were on it. Like, you just kind of just almost take anything at that point. And now, Sam Darnold. if you can't even get Fab for the guy, do you just cut him and pick up a receiver, a running back in best ball?
So here's a funny story. In a C2C league that Ray and I have, I got, which I run, shout out to Ray, but I run about 80% of it. But we had Malik Willis, and he is our QB6. And I got so sick of seeing him on the roster. I cut him right before the supplemental rookie draft, which the supplemental rookie drafts are dog shit in those leagues. You're talking about like Davis Allen is like a mid first round pick because there's just nobody else, right? Then Malik Willis fell to like the mid second. I mean, I'm going to pull up the board and just tell you the players that went, because I was so sick of seeing Malik Willis that I just cut him. And here's the players that went ahead of him in the rookie draft. Okay. All right. So I caught him and he went at the 202, right? So here's the guys that went in front of him. Darius Davis, Trey Tucker, Tanner McKee. Let's see, Justin Shorter. Who else? Couple of the others I think you could justify, like Stetson Bennett, Malik Davis was out there, got picked up. Kyle Trask went ahead of him. But like we're talking about like the 103 in this draft was Tyler Scott. Then Malik Willis didn't get until the 202.
Yeah, that just shows you where he's valued at now. Nobody wants him. He's just like Chernobyl out here.
And if you see that, it takes a couple leagues where you see that and you go, this guy is, he's literally clogging a roster spot. The value I'm getting by getting rid of him and someone else actually drafting him is actually higher for my team because someone else has him now. You know, now that's not best ball, so it doesn't kill you as much to have him on the team, but still, like, just the way I like to run my leagues, if I identify a clear roster clogger like that, I'm okay being wrong. If he ever bounces back to, let's say Malik Willis were to get traded tomorrow, like what would be the best case scenario for him? He's like traded to the Cardinals and they're like, he's starting. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the same with Matt Corral. They're just buried. They're on cheap contracts, but there's no path. There's just no path.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want any Matt Corrals. The only ones that I've gotten pretty much for free off of waivers just to kind of see what happens. But yeah, it kind of sucks right now. That I was just kind of curious what you were thinking about with those type of guys.
Well, no, I have, I think, one Malik Willis and two Matt Corrals. And I'm sitting here going,
that's
like,
kind
all
of
right,
where I'm at. Yeah.
What is the path? The path is you just pray that some desperate team trades for him because they liked their film back in college or something and is going to give him a shot to play for like three games because they have nothing else to play for. It's literally like when the Rams picked up Mayfield last year. Oh, we'll give him a shot. That's all you're hoping for. That's like the best case outcome. And if they stay on their current teams, they will never get a shot. They will hit free agency in like 2027 or 2026. And you'd be like, hey, remember that Matt Corral? He never got a shot. Oh, well. You know, like there's no path. So kind of be cognizant of that and really do that type of analysis on every player that you're looking at on your roster. And you know, when you're doing an auto accept trade block, you have to examine, why is this player on my team? What is my format? What are picks worth? Why is this player on my team? And if you can't answer that, you should probably consider a move with that player in some capacity. Cut, trade for Fab, trade for a fourth, trade for a third, throw them into a deal. Like, they shouldn't just be, well, I need to roster somebody. You know, because you're leaving a little meat on the bone if you do that. So that would be my final advice. Any final tips? I guess we didn't talk about how to do this. How do you make yours look presentable just in terms of actually promoting it. Cause I know we kind of do the same thing. We format it using just like the HTML coder to make it line up with, at least on MFL, it lines up very nicely with the list of the players. So it looks very clean. You can see, you know, right across from the player, you can see their price. And then Sleeper, you can do it where you just change the nickname and just say like auto accept any second, any third, whatever. What do you think the best way to market it is?
I usually go in my chats, whether it's group me, Discord, whatever, and I'll write, hey, my auto accept trade block is posted. That's basically all I do for promotion on it. So like if you were to, you know, talking about how you were how you do it with the HTML editor. So what do you just go to Google and type in like HTML editor or something like that? Or what would you do for NFL leagues?
I use a tool that is called textfixer.com, and it has an HTML coder. And you literally just set it to the format and you type in the text as it would be in MFL, and then you just hit generate HTML, and it literally creates a list exactly like it would on MFL. Okay. I just paste that into the trade block, and as long as you select the players that you're putting in on the same list as you type into the text, it's literally a one for one. There's some leagues that are weird where like the character limit is hit and like it's all over the place when you click on the trade block. Like, it's, you ever seen those where like the page is really long and it doesn't line up perfectly, but most of them line up pretty good so you can see it. And then I'm sure you've seen where I go to the MFL option that just says email the whole league, and I just send them a screenshot. So it's like, if you didn't check the trade bait, you're going to get an email.
Some teams, I've never even checked, honestly. You have to go in and click it on your email preferences on MFL to say, hey, I want to get people's trade block emails sent to me. Like, some people either have it.
I don't get those. I turn those off. So yeah, if you update your trade bait, I don't get those.
Yeah. See, I get them. So, and I would say 95% of the time I just hit delete, unless I'm like, oh, I'm bored, let me look through and see what this guy wrote. But yeah, that's kind of how I do it. Same way as you. I know the HTML off the top of my head, so I just do it manually instead of doing it the way you do it. It's probably easier the way you do it. But I just do it manually, and I know like the codes and everything. So
yeah, I know it from seeing it a million times, but I'm just like, I just click on this site and do it. And it, whatever way you want to do it, make it look, I think we both try to make it look presentable so that someone doesn't have to like read. They can just look for 5 seconds and see it. Another thing you can do is take a screenshot, post it in your chat, literally screenshot your trade bait where it says auto accept prices and post it in your chat.
Yep.
If people don't like it, then whatever. Ignore the comments from the haters that are going, oh, never, those are inflated prices. It's like, okay. Running backs for a third, is that really an inflated price? Really what they're saying is nobody wants those players, which largely we probably already know that. So try it out, test it in your league. The goal is to literally improve your roster construction and gain liquidity for the future where you can spend it at a time where you have more information. I think that's it in a nutshell. So any final words you want to say, final tips, ideas, anything you want to close it out with?
No, not really. I think we kind of covered most of the bases there, so I think we did a pretty good job at it. Something that I like doing in a lot of my leagues. I know Scott likes doing it in his leagues, and sometimes you get some action, sometimes you don't. Don't be discouraged if you don't get some action on it. You know, maybe your prices are maybe a little too high. Maybe you have to come down on them. Or, you know, maybe they're, you know, you're just not getting enough action. That's all it is sometimes. So,
do you ever buy off of auto accept trade box? You and I have bought from each other before.
Yeah, you bought a couple of my KJ Osborne's last year. I've bought from you a couple times. So, it just depends on if I'm looking for something specific on my team or a specific player or whatnot. So
good stuff. Well, yeah, let us know if anything happens with auto accepts in your league, and don't get discouraged if people hate on it, because it's a new tactic, not new for us, but I think it's new around, you know, I think the dynasty community or the dynasty streets. And it's funny when I see a random league that doesn't have you or me, but then there's people using the auto accept trade block. I'm like, they've probably gotten it from one of us somewhere along the line, because really no one else did it before we did. I mean, we were doing it. I remember, was it 2018? You were buying Trey Quinns from me.
Yeah, something like that.
But I mean, it's been like 5 years that we've been doing it. It hasn't just been all the last couple of years. Like, we haven't had the platform to talk about it, but we've been doing it for a while. So, you know, there, every economy, there's probably going to be a buyer. There's going to be a seller, depending on where the market is. So try it and report back if you get any deals.
Yep, for sure. But, you know, let's take a quick little break here for Underdog. And then I have one more quick little topic I wanted to talk about before we end today's show. So we will be back in about a minute and 30 seconds. Hey, Destination Devi listeners, Eric here of the America's Game podcast. And hopefully by now you've heard that Underdog Fantasy has partnered up with Destination Devi. You want to get in all of these year-long best ball contests and compete with Ray Garvin, Ike and Gene of the Off the Line Fantasy podcast, Adam and Mike of 4D Chess, and Scott Connor and myself at the America's Game Pod? Well, now is your chance. If you sign up with the code America's Game, all one word, you will get a 100% deposit match up to $100 free by Underdog Fantasy. The best part of that, though, if you deposit at least $10, you will get access to the Destination Devi Discord for free. You'll get it for one full year, and now is the time to do it right before the NFL draft and get all those goodies that are going on right now in the Destination Devi Discord. And right now, as we know, it is tax money season. Are you getting any money back? Why don't you take $100 and deposit it on Underdog Fantasy, and you'll get a free $100 from Underdog, and you'll get access to Destination Devi. There is no better deal going on right now than that. So use that promo code America's Game, once again, all one word, and sign up today. Now, back to the show. All right, welcome back, guys. So the last topic that I wanted to bring up here is kind of goes back to a little bit to our Cardinals conversation we were having earlier. And with the Cardinals looking like they're kind of just tanking this year a little bit, they're trying to go for maybe that first overall pick. What do you do with Kyler Murray right now? Do you just kind of just go ahead and trade him, Kyler Murray? Because if they're gunning for that first overall pick again, they're trading Kyler Murray. They're taking Caleb Williams, and Kyler Murray's going to be gone. I know it's going to cost them a crap load of money to trade him, but what are you doing with Kyler Murray in Dynasty right now? If he's going to be missing half the year, do you kind of just get out on him now and just take kind of like almost any first, basically?
No, because I think he's still a top 12 quarterback. I think he'll bounce back. He'll get traded somewhere. He's probably their long-term starter. Like, he's going to get afforded that opportunity, whether it's Arizona or whether it's somewhere else. So I think with Kyler, I've wrote a couple times that you should sell him, but then I've also talked about I want to buy some. So I think that tells me in my mind it's price dependent. If I can buy him for a first, yeah, sure. If I can sell him at QB12 prices and get Deshaun Watson because people think Watson's not that good. If I can sell Kyler in 2 seconds and get Deshaun Watson or something like that, I'm doing that all day. If I can sell a future first in Kyler and get Lamar Jackson or even Watson, I'd probably be willing to do that, you know, because I just like those guys better. And I don't think the difference is if I'm going to bet against a first, I think it's going to be a late first. I'm okay doing that. But I think what I'm doing is I'm just trying to align Kyler on the right teams. I want to have shares. I want to have exposure. I probably don't want to be overexposed. Right now I have Kyler. Where am I at on Kyler? I know I've sold a decent amount of Kyler Murray this offseason, but he's starting to get to a price now. Yeah, I have 6 out of 50 leagues that have Kyler. So I'm like kind of fine with that, but now I want to figure out, is there any that I can sell and upgrade? And is there any teams I can buy that I'm fine parking him on for a year? And I don't care if he plays this year. I don't care what team he gets traded to, but he's a future play, you know? So I think it's, I want to have enough exposure where I have some, I don't have a ton. You have to also think about what's the acquisition cost going to be in the next 6 to 12 months with Kyler. I bet you, let's fast forward 9 months from now. That'd be February 26th of 2024. Super Bowl's over. You already know who has the number one pick, right? If it's Arizona sitting at 1-3, where do you think Kyler's going in startups when he's still on the Cardinals? And people are a little scared. Yeah, he's probably going to get traded. But what if he haggles or they can't trade him and it becomes kind of a circus? He'll be attainable in startups, don't you think? If the Cardinals end the year with the 101 pick and he's still on the Cardinals, there will be a period where in a startup you'll be able to get him 10% lower than maybe you even can get him now, or at least at the same price that he's going for right now, knowing he's not going to probably play some this season, you'll be able to get him. So I think there's going to be two places where I can buy him back. One, I can buy him on teams where I know I'm kind of punting this year. But two, I know new teams that I build next year, I'll be able to have another buying window. So two of the levers are going to say he's going to be able to be purchased now or at a future time at the same cost or a little lower. So I'd say sell him in the leagues where maybe he's not being viewed that way and either hold out or buy him in the leagues where he is and put him on the right kind of teams. I think that's it. He's too good just to say I'm dumping him.
Right.
He's going to get another shot. He just is. Now you can, I've seen people buy into, oh man, he's not a good leader. People don't really like him. Who cares? He's going to get another shot. Now, if he goes somewhere else and he sucks, or he goes somewhere else and he's good, but he's a terrible leader, then maybe he's kind of going down like the Russell Wilson road a little bit, right? Where it's like, oh man, I don't know about this guy. Like there kind of might be some issues where he just doesn't, he doesn't have it anymore. Nobody really wants him. I think someone made a good comparison. He's got the Russell Wilson kind of vibe about him to where like he's kind of hurt some of his chances from an NFL perspective a little bit. Like he might have rubbed some people the wrong way. But then he could also have like the Carson Wentz factor where he's not good enough to overcome it. We think he is, but what if he's not? Because he's, you would agree, he's not the kind of guy that if he's not good enough to be a higher end quarterback, it's not like he's offering you a lot more where you have to have him as your leader of your team, you know, which makes him a risky dynasty asset. Whether any of that is true or not, it matters for the perception of the player. It's no different than, like, do you really see Kyler that different than Tua? Aren't they kind of like they could be a big reward if nothing goes wrong the rest of their career? But they could also be done for in like 2 years.
Yeah, for sure.
So how much do you want of those guys? I'm willing to buy in some Tua, but it's got to be on certain spots. The Tua teams, I probably want to be like, man, I can't get an elite quarterback. He's a guy I can buy now if I can get him at the right price. But I don't want to count on Tua for 2025. Right. Kyler, I'd rather count on Kyler for 2025.
Right.
So, I mean, that's my answer. It's buy and sell. It's just aligning them within your portfolio on the right kind of teams. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as you. Just kind of see, I'm trying to think of like, what would even be like the proper deal to like go and try and get him? Do you just offer a 2024 first for him? Or?
Nah, say you have a stack team and he's your QB2. I don't want to say stacked, but let's say you have a team you think is going to make the playoffs, but he's your QB2 and you just haven't got the right offer. What are you willing to do in a league like that?
Say it again. I'm sorry.
You have a pretty good team. He's your QB2. Now, what are you willing to do to try to get off of him in a league like that? Knowing that the team might be able to survive. He could come back the second half of the year and he could be startable for you. And then you really don't want to sell at a low point right now.
Right.
At the same time, you haven't sold him yet. Do you really think in 2023, CJ Stroud is helping you more than Kyler Murray? I don't think so.
That's tough. No. Yeah, it's tough, but probably not. No.
Okay, so what do you do? What do you do in that situation? What would you be willing to add to go get like Watson or Lamar?
Yeah, I think what you said earlier. If I can give Kyler in 2 seconds to go get Watson, I would do that. I'd be comfortable with that.
Now, what if you're middle of the pack team? You're a fringe playoff team, and if it goes wrong, you just traded the 103 and Kyler for Lamar. You still that scared about Kyler? Because it's easy for the awesome playoff team to give up their first, and then the team that knows they're tanking isn't giving up their first. So most likely, if you're operating in that range, you're middle of the pack. Do you still want to take that gamble? Is it worth it for the potential 1 year of production?
Yeah. Oh, man, that one's tough. Yeah, especially if I'm that middling team like you're talking about, man. I don't think I could do that because if I, like you said, if I end up giving like the 103 away in next year's class with Caleb and Marvin Harrison and Brock Bowers and a couple of these running backs, like, oh, man, I would be kicking myself for that one.
So would you give up one of those mid-firsts plus Kyler for Fields?
No, I don't think so.
Because then what if Fields' passing doesn't improve?
Yeah, that's
and then
what I'm afraid of.
And then week 12, Fields is injured, Kyler's back, and Kyler's outscoring Fields. And you just banked on the first. Well, you got the extra first in that deal, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
And now, at the same time, if you have Lamar Jackson and you think you can contend, are you selling Lamar for Kyler in a first?
Lamar for Kyler in a first. I think I'd be okay with it.
Interesting. Okay. So you're more on the let's buy Kyler side then, if you can get the right discount.
Yeah, I think on the right discount, I can do it. And also depends on my team. Like if that same offer and I have Lamar and I'm top three, top four team, I probably am not going to do it because Kyler's going to miss half the year probably. So I think it kind of just depends on your team and where you're at right now. But if you're like one of these middling teams or you're rebuilding or whatever, and you can get Kyler on the cheap for that, I think that's kind of where I would be looking to do it. But like on a contender, if I get him as like my third quarterback, like if I had, you know, some of your teams that you had, like I have one team where I got Herbert, Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Will Levis, and Justin Fields. Like, if I have, like, five of those guys and I can go ahead and give up Dak and something to get Kyler, and, you know, I think I can maybe get a slight upgrade there from Kyler to Dak at one point, that's probably a team I'd be willing to try then and do that on.
Okay, so let's say you could get a top guaranteed top five pick, but not next necessarily a shot at the 101. But a team you're pretty confident is not going to make the playoffs, right? Let's call it 102 to 105.
Okay.
Would you trade your Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert for Kyler in that one pick? So you're going up a tier. It's not Lamar,
yeah.
Fields, and Burrow, Herbert, Lawrence.
Right. I don't think I could do it. No, not for Burrow or Herbert.
See, it feels like if you had the opposite end of that deal, you would add the pick to Kyler to get one of those guys, right? Just to set it and forget it, not even have to mess with it.
Yes, yes, for sure.
That's probably the deal to look at. It's a gamble because if that's the 102, you're like, damn it. There's a way that I could have preferred that. Because if you'd have done that deal this year, if I told you what side would you prefer, Trevor Lawrence or Kyler Murray and Anthony Richardson?
I would have took Kyler and Richardson.
Now, if it's Kyler Murray and Jahmyr Gibbs, you'd probably rather have Trevor Lawrence, right?
Yes.
So that is a big gap, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So that deal could work out to where you end up getting two quarterbacks out of it, and you're like, damn, that's a nice deal. Or it could have been, man, I'm glad I made that trade because I got an elite quarterback, and all I gave up was essentially a running back and another quarterback that I like a lot less.
Yeah.
Like, and that could be next year's class too. 105 could still be a really good player, but it's not Drake May.
Yeah.
It's not Marvin Harrison Jr. I assume Harrison's going to be valued like CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown range already. So, like, you can almost include him like in that top.
Like, I think he's probably the 103 or the third wide receiver valued.
That's what I mean. He's already there. So, yeah. if you get a top three pick next year, assuming Drake May kind of ends up in the, if he's in the Bryce Young, CJ Stroud range, but he's a better player than those guys, he'll be in that same, you know, first round startup range.
Yeah.
But if you're outside that top three next year and you make that deal, you're going to be kicking yourself that you didn't take the elite quarterback because it was right there. You know, it was, man, all I had to give up was the 104 or the 105. Yeah, that's going to be a good player, but it's not the same value. So I think that's something to kind of think about. And that's where it's a really, really intriguing deal. What would be the line for you of what you'd be willing to sell if you were selling like Herbert or Burrow for Kyler? What would you need on top?
I think I would have to get Kyler a first round pick and probably like another useful player, like, like a Terry McLaurin.
Garrett Wilson and Kyler for Burrow.
It's not bad. I think the only way that I would do that is if I had, a quarterback that I could use for the first, 8 weeks behind that. So, like, just somebody like a Derek Carr, somebody like that.
So they throw in that same deal, they throw you Baker Mayfield. Does that count? Or is he too risky?
Too risky.
Ritter.
Too risky, but a little better than Baker.
He's going to start. You have to admit it.
Oh, yeah, but it's still more, it's still just as risky as, Baker is.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that you can go both ways on Kyler, and I think he's a kind of a cool player to talk about because there are very polarizing views on him. Some people are out on him because they think he's bad character, always going to be kind of a problem, doesn't work hard. Now he's got a bad injury. You don't know if he's going to come back and run. But you could also say, what if he comes back and his recovery is fine, and then in 2024 he's a top 8 QB again? Because he's been a top 8 QB every year of his fantasy career. So, I mean, he's got a track record of, like, you're getting QB1 numbers from him. So he's probably a good bet to those people, and then he's probably a sell if you can get anywhere close to, adding something to him and getting one of those other elite guys. So he's kind of a fun player to talk about.
For sure. That's kind of why I was asking with all this. Sounds like the Cardinals are going to tank. Got to cut Hopkins today. Does Kyler even play this year? Do they even risk it? Stuff like that. Like, it sounds like they want to, they're probably going for Caleb, and Kyler's going to be on the move next year. So that's going to be a whole topic of conversation come January and February. Oh, where's Kyler going to land? It's like a team like Washington, they're probably going to win 6, 7, 8 games again, and they're going to be picking 15th again, and they're not going to be able to go get Drake May or Caleb Williams. Does Washington, with a new owner and franchise, owner of the franchise, do they take on Kyler? So that could be something that happens.
Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta, another one.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay, they're going to be desperate to get a quarterback like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Someone's going to lose out. It's kind of like Carolina. There was like 3 years in a row there where they just couldn't get the quarterback. They couldn't trade for Deshaun Watson. They made a dumb mistake and passed on Justin Fields in the draft. Carolina just kind of kept kicking it down the road before they finally went and got somebody this year with Bryce Young. So it kind of seems like Washington's in that boat now. Like, Washington has kind of kicked it down the road a couple times and haven't gotten that guy yet. So I think like Washington, maybe Atlanta, those are good ones.
I can see the Raiders for Kyler too.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, Jimmy G effectively has a 1-year deal, and now he decided to have this surgery, so I don't even know if they really are super happy with him at this point.
Yeah, well, I think Aiden just kind of takes it over and leads that team to the promised land.
Who needs Kyler Murray when you can get Aiden O'Connell?
Exactly. I agree.
Man, if Aiden O'Connell hits, Eric's going to have so much profit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, AFG.
All right, so I had two in my mind. I'm going to give you my first one that I think maybe you won't have anything for, and if you don't, then we'll just skip it. So obviously it's Memorial Day weekend coming up here. The best racing day on the calendar. Monaco in the morning for Formula One, IndyCar for the Indy 500 at noon, NASCAR to end the night, Coca-Cola 600. What's your favorite racing moment? Do you have one or no?
Does the elementary school Pinewood Derby count?
No. I'm just talking like Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR. Do you have anything?
Magic Mountain go-kart racing. Does that count?
Nope. Okay. All right. We're cutting this. I'm cutting bait on this one. All right. So I went and saw the new Fast and Furious movie on Tuesday evening. What's your favorite Fast and Furious movie or moment in the series?
I think I've only seen the first two.
Scott.
Yeah, it's, listen, I spend all my time on sports and Dynasty.
You're killing me.
And so I watch some shows and stuff, but no, I got nothing for Fast and the Furious.
Man.
I barely remember the ones I watched. I haven't watched them all. How many is there? Nine now?
This is the 10th one.
Yeah, ridiculous. I haven't definitely not seen the last like seven of them.
Okay. All right. Well, I figured I'd try. Oh, man.
0-2. What else you got?
0-2. I got to come up with something here on the fly. Man. Okay. So we've kind of done this the last couple times, but I'll do one more. So NBA Finals. I know we're not going to talk about hockey because nobody listens to hockey, but we have a lot of basketball fans that listen to Destination Devi. So basketball, NBA Finals are coming up here. I think Celtics and Heat are still going. What's your favorite NBA Finals moment?
It's got to be the Sixers-Lakers series where the Lakers beat them in five. But that game one with the Tyronn Lue step over by Iverson, and you thought the Sixers could actually pull it out when they ended up starting off the series good, and then they ended up just losing in four straight. So
yeah, I remember back then you were a big Sixers fan. You were a big Iverson fan.
Yeah, I mean, they were,
they had
you
a
know,
good
they
team.
They were probably one of those teams that deserved to potentially win a title, but, you know, those Lakers teams were pretty much unstoppable. So, yeah. I mean, that you just kind of had the good team at the wrong time, you know?
Yep.
Like, that's pretty much wasn't what it was. I mean, the Sixers ended up winning the first game in Los Angeles. That was the one where I think Iverson had like 48 or 50 points or something like that, and had that famous step over on Tyronn Lue on the baseline, and you were like, damn, they're actually going to get it done. But then, you know, they went back to Philly because, of course, if you can win the first game on the road, you have the advantage now, right? Because you basically have home court. But then they went back to Philly. Game three, I remember, was close. But the Lakers pulled it out, and then and after that, the Lakers pretty much just whooped them. I think they won the next two games by double figures. So I remember that game three was awesome because the atmosphere was great during that game. But the fact they didn't win that game, I was like, man, yeah, the series is probably over at this point. And then they just lost in five and never got back. They tried. You know, they made moves. Like, you remember the Sixers went out and got Derek Coleman.
Coleman. They had Eric Snow as the point guard. They had, I think they got Tyrone Hill, who's one of the best rebounders at the time. They had him with Coleman.
At the time it was Eric Snow, Aaron McKee, Dikembe Mutombo.
McKee and Mutombo, yep.
And then they went out the next couple of years and tried to make moves, tried to get back, got Derek Coleman the next year. They got close. They were good for like two or three more years, but it just never was the magic of that season. And it was very similar to, obviously Iverson was a little bit older at that time. But it was very similar to the teams where, LeBron was in Cleveland, and you look at the rest of his roster and you're like, dude, how did he carry this team to the finals? They would have just had one more guy that could have got it done, and they just didn't, and they never got back. They went out, I remember, and got, you know, player after player after player every year trying to make it work for like four more years. Never ended up working. I remember a couple years later they traded for Glenn Robinson.
Yep.
And they just ended up always trying to fill like that second score, and they could just never make it work. And it never ended up working. Chris Webber. Chris Webber, Glenn Robinson, Derek Coleman. Every year they tried to get like a second score to complement Iverson, and it was always like a big guy that could score, and it just never worked out. So that was probably my favorite. That was the peak of my finals. Memories fandom, was then. Right. There were many others too. Like, there were some other good ones. in the past, but that was always my favorite because that was the one team that I like really rooted for.
Yeah, you definitely get some. There are some dominant teams in there, like you said, the Lakers. There, those Lakers Kings series around that time were awesome. I loved watching those. I would say my favorite one probably was the 98 with Utah and Chicago. Those were some really, really good battles there between Utah and Chicago. Jordan's final run, all that. Just, like Utah and Houston had the Western Finals that year. That was a hell of a series. And that was the only time that Jordan went to a Game 7 was that East Finals against Indiana, who was really, really good too. So, I'd probably say that one was probably my favorite that I remember from a kid. Obviously, you know, I had a couple of the Cavs ones where they won, you know, lost a couple there. The early one, I think it was 06 when they played the Spurs, and they got swept by the Spurs 4-0. That was a fun one, but it was just LeBron and that was it. Like they had Ilgauskas and that was like really it. Like there was just nobody else on that team that just could compete on that level with San Antonio that year. So that brought back some memories as well. The one I think it was the strike shortened year when the I don't know, for some reason I really liked the Knicks because I always liked Allen Houston. They had Sprewell, they had Larry Johnson, all those guys, and they went up against the Spurs that year too. I think it was 2000. That was a fun time watching that one. That's probably most of my ones. They're probably more the later ones. Anything more recent I didn't really like. Another one that I didn't watch it, but I liked it, was Dallas beating Miami. Just a stick in LeBron's face. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just a couple of mine for sure. More of the Bulls ones that I remember that were some of my favorites.
Really interesting Twitter thread. The people might not like this if they're a big Jordan fan, and I really don't have a dog in the fight. But it was a very interesting thread, and it just said the truth about Michael Jordan. It's worth reading. Basically, it's just talked about how, like, the first decade of his career, he didn't do anything. And I didn't even realize, and I grew up during it. Now, a little bit was when I was a kid, you know, but you go through and you look at, it's some interesting stuff laid out about how when he first entered the league, couldn't even win a playoff game.
Did you ever watch the Last Dance documentary?
Hmm.
Okay. So you know most of this stuff then. Okay.
I know most of it, but I think this, and I'm not planting a flag on this argument necessarily, but you know, people constantly throw around the, you know, LeBron could never win a title till he went to the Heat, you know? And it's like, sure, LeBron or Jordan didn't go to another team. But if you look at some of the parallels, you're like, okay, yeah, it's not like he was the most dominant player in the league from day one. You know, now are you going to criticize him? Like the titles he didn't win early on were won by essentially the Lakers or the Celtics or the Pistons for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like it was just better teams than him. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you kind of look at LeBron's run and you're like, LeBron crossed paths with Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant, Shaq, Steph Curry. Like all the rings won during LeBron's career was by some combination of those guys. You know, like there's a couple others mixed in there, but it's kind of like, damn, he's going up against Kobe who has 5 rings. He's going up against Steph Curry who has 4 rings. You know, like it's not like you can say, oh, he didn't go up against anybody. So it's just an interesting debate, and I don't think it's fair to be like, oh, yeah, this guy has 6 rings, this guy has 5. He's just clearly better. There has to be some context in it. So it's an interesting thread, though, because I think a lot of people from our generation and older are like, oh, my God, Jordan's just so much better. Like, he's the greatest. Nobody's ever been better, you know, 6 for 6 in the finals. But there's this context to everything. So it was a very eye-opening thread, and I'm sure people will have disagreed.
I don't like LeBron at all, but I'm not one of those guys that's going to say, oh, he's not even a top 5 player in the league. Like, I'm not that naive and dumb. Like, he's definitely top three of NBA players of all time. He, I think it's safe to say he's the greatest athlete ever in NBA history. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, I don't know. I just think Jordan was a better player, but I mean, LeBron is literally second or third. You can argue, you know, between a couple other players. Like LeBron, I think LeBron's was better than Kobe. Like, I think Kobe was a better, like, shooter, clutch player, all that kind of stuff. But LeBron literally does everything: points, rebounds, assists. You know, he can go in and run you down the court and do the and block your shot, everything. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. But a good one to end, even yep, though you for sure. you nixed my first two.
All good.
All right, guys. Well, enjoy your Memorial Day weekend coming up here. Hope you guys have a good time with some cookouts, hang out with family, and obviously remember all those people that we've lost. But yeah, at Eric Vanek NFL on Twitter is my handle, and also follow the pod at America's Game Pod on Twitter as well. And then Scott, do you have anything coming up on Destination Dynasty coming this week?
No, it'll probably be a short episode, just me kind of talking through some things that are in my head. It'll be definitely a shortened episode. It won't be one of these hour 15, hour 30 minute shows, just because it is a long weekend. I'll enjoy the Memorial Day weekend. But yes, there will be a Destination Dynasty coming out on Monday. And it'll just be a couple topics that are in my brain, maybe some trade ideas, something pretty lighthearted. And then we'll have a kind of a more formal plan going forward in June and July, as we're really getting into the dead period. So yeah, it'll be a quick episode, holiday episode, and agree with everything you said.
Sweet. All right, guys, we will see you next week for episode 47.